You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Thursday morning, May 8th, 2025. It's another beautiful morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota. From wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media Radio Network or on the app, Don Rue always begins by saying you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. You might be watching. Civic Media also has a YouTube channel that we're on now, and their Facebook page, and the Up North News Facebook page, and the Up North News YouTube channel. So that's why we comb our hair here in the morning as well. However you got here, appreciate you starting the day right here. I got a question for you. Are you ready for a break from me? Yeah, because we've done this three-hour show now for what? 2 weeks almost, maybe, feels like. I don't know, week and a half. Anyway, I'm going to take a little time off. I've got a good friend getting married and going to be part of the festivities there. So we've got some pinch hitters starting with Chad Holmes tomorrow. Don't worry, I will be back. I know in this day and age, it's like, wait a minute, did he leave the country? Is he at Guantanamo? No, everything's good here so far. Just going to go have a little bit of fun. So, Alicia, thank you. Your hair looks beautiful. Yeah, except the lighting. I mean, it was always like so dark, it was practically black. And it seems I can't find a filter or lighting that doesn't make it look so much lighter, almost a gray, which that can't be right. Coming up on the program today, the 2024 election. Remember it? It's finally over. The 2024 election is finally over. There was still one undecided race until now, a big one, for a seat on the North Carolina Supreme Court, where it appeared the losing candidate was going to be successful in throwing out thousands of votes. Sanity prevailed at the very last minute, and we will talk to one of my Courier Newsroom colleagues, Michael McElroy from the Cardinal and Pine in North Carolina, to get a live update from him later this hour. Also, Donald Trump's MAGA mentality has made it almost socially acceptable to engage in public heckling and taunting. But, folks, there are right ways and wrong ways for Trump critics to make their points and score some points in the court of public opinion. And we'll have an example from yesterday at the state capitol. Later today, U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy is expected to roll out a plan to patch up an old and broken air traffic control system. The problems in the system, like old technology and demographics, those problems didn't appear quickly, and a solution will not be in place quickly, but here's what doesn't help. Sean Duffy shaming his predecessor for not fixing things sooner. Why is that not helpful? Because his predecessor wanted to fix things sooner, but as a congressman from up north, Sean Duffy voted against funding the changes everyone knew was needed. And Republicans have turned down things like requests to fund 3,000 more air traffic controllers. And to put it in strong language, Sean Duffy hopes we're all dumb enough to accept his finger pointing rather than accepting responsibility. We'll talk about that in our next hour. Looking under the dome in our state capitol report, Wisconsin isn't the only place dealing with a shortage of affordable homes. And it's also not the only place trying to confront one of the causes of that: hedge funds purchasing properties and converting them to rentals. It gives the hedge fund a regular stream of income, but it also reduces the number of single-family homes available in an area, driving up the price for what remains. We're going to talk to State Senator Sarah Kieske of Lodi about her bill, similar to proposals elsewhere, that seek to limit the degree to which Wall Street can be a landlord here in Wisconsin. Melissa Baldoff will have our climate check coming up in our 8 o'clock hour. Energy Star. That is about as slam dunk as it gets for government programs. This one encourages buying energy efficient home appliances. Over the past 30 years, Energy Star has saved consumers and businesses $500 million. So, of course, Donald Trump is cutting it. Melissa will have that for us. Sean O'Malley tells us about money in the markets. We'll check in with Chad Holmes in Wausau and Brittany Merlot's forecast. She'll be here in an hour. Here's what she says about the statewide forecast. A cold snap today and tomorrow with freezing temps for some overnight before warm weather for the weekend that could also bring in a little rain in spots. Brittany will have the details in an hour. But for today, sunny and comfortable statewide. Mid-50s in the eastern part of the state, mid-60s in the western part of the state, and east wind at 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, clear and cool, scattered frost, temps in the low to mid-30s statewide, and a light southeasterly wind. Temperatures around the state right now, I thought I was done whining about the 20s. It's 43 here on Lake Wissota, but it's 26 in Hayward. Amory's at 40, Wausau's at 36, it's 37 in Rapids, 46 in La Crosse, Green Bay at 37, Madison 41, and it's 43 degrees at Racine's Radio Park, where we welcome in Greg Bach to the program. Again, please do not confuse the applause for white smoke. The smoke that came out of the Sistine Chapel in the last hour.
That was my nickname in college.
Black smoke came out of the Sistine Chapel about an hour ago when the Cardinals completed their second ballot. And I got to give Trigvi Olsen credit when I was on the Todd Alba show with him yesterday, because the first balloting had been completed and there was black smoke. And Trigvi, as he does so dryly, simply says, Donald Trump has lost another election. So not that he wouldn't accept if nominated, but I don't think that's going to happen.
God.
Same goes for Mr. Bach. Again, there's a lot of jobs we can all do in life, but Pope, I don't know.
I'd be an awesome Pope.
Would you?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
All right.
The first thing I would do is liquidate the Vatican.
Okay.
We're all living in small apartments. You're all living a humble life.
Yep. I like it.
Yep. Yeah, I'd make a ton of changes. Oh, my gosh. Catholics would hate white smoke over here.
Well, no, not all of them, trust me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's such a divide between, and it's weird to think it's a divide between those who want to follow Francis and, you know, have this more outwardly compassionate view of things, and others who want a much more, you know, severely conservative, strict view on things. Tom in New Berlin on the text line says he's with you, Greg. So you already have your first cardinal. Cardinal Tom from New Berlin in the new College of Cardinals is coming up here.
And we'll call him the awesome college. We're going to call him the awesome Technical College of Cardinals.
Technical College. The Community College of Cardinals. Yeah. I like it. See, now, this is maybe the kind of joking I need to make, because not only am I attending a dear friend's destination wedding, they have asked me to officiate it. And so I am greatly concerned about lightning strikes at some point just as the ceremony is about to begin. But I am very humbled, flattered that, you know, that's how these folks want to celebrate their love with friends and family. And boy, do we need that more than ever these days. Just a reminder that love can win in the end.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Because these are folks who they've not had the easiest lives. I mean, few of us have.
Mm-hmm.
But to see that they found each other and found love and are going to be happy. I mean, these kids are going to make it. And I love that. I'm now at the age where I talk about people in their mid-40s. These kids are going to make it. They're going to be just
these
fine.
These youngins have what they call the love bug.
So looking forward to that. Chad Holmes will be pinch hitting tomorrow. Luke Mathers is joining you on Monday. No, mm-hmm. No. It's
Dr. Lyle.
No, not that either. It's now Matt Rothschild.
Oh, that's right. Matt Rothschild is going to be here on Monday. You're right. Oh,
Matt is going to be Monday through Thursday of next week.
Yeah.
And then Chad Holmes. And then on Monday the 19th, the return of Bach in the Dock. We need a little sounder. Like when I say Bach in the Dock, you get a little electric guitar. Like,
yeah, You talk for a second. Give it like a 30-second ramp up.
Let me tell you how excited these kids are. Okay, again, the old man's talking about the kids here. Dr. Lyerly is a very busy OBGYN physician, but she has now her own weekend radio show that you can find on the Civic Media app. Look at the Civic Media website, and loves to fill in from time to time as her schedule allows, and has found in Greg Bach arguably the perfect partner for something like this, where she can parachute in and Greg can keep the show on the rails, and it works out wonderfully for both of them. So here they're only filling in for one of the days that I'm gone. But, I mean, we are making the most of it to promote this thing because it's still 11 days away. Have I vamped enough yet for this?
I'm just choosing one. Let's go for it.
To tell you that on Monday, May 19th, the return of Bach in the Dock.
That sucked. All right, cool.
Oh no, that wasn't bad at all.
I was looking for squiggly,
You want to pick one more? It's just at random, right?
Yeah, let's try another one.
So again, folks, Monday morning, May 19th at 6 a.m., the return of Bach in the Dock.
Yeah. Nope, yep, that was terrible too.
Yep. Okay, last one, and then we gotta go. we get three strikes at this.
You're right.
Okay.
All right. Give it a big
one. Monday, May 19th, you're gonna pay for the whole radio, but you're only gonna need the edge of your seat for Bach in the Dock.
We'll
keep working on it. The Up North News Daily Newsletter is out. Christina Laurie puts it together without guitar licks. And here's what she's got coming up in today's newsletter. 5 epic Wisconsin train rides to add to your summer bucket list. I love this. They're these little like dinner train rides. There's like, I think there's a pizza train, if I'm not mistaken, and some others. Let's see, there's one along the St. Croix River. One of them is run with a 110-year-old steam engine. So, yes, by all means, check those train rides out in our newsletter and on our website as well. A little bit more about UW-Madison having a big anniversary recently and much more. Sign up for it all over at upnorthnewswi.com. All right, let's check a little sports here at 6:18. It was an ugly one for the Milwaukee Brewers yesterday afternoon. They'd been going for a sweep of the Houston Astros. No go. The Astros pounded the Brewers 9-1, snapping Milwaukee's 3-game winning streak and leaving both teams with records of 500, as we are now 6 weeks into the season. I will say Josh Hader got a really nice return. It was his first game back at American Family Field since he was originally traded to San Diego. He now pitches with Houston. And when he actually first came onto the field for the first time out of the dugout to walk to the bullpen before the game started, they did a nice tribute to him, put him up on the scoreboard, and the crowd gave a nice welcome. Because, again, as Greg and I were saying, was it yesterday we were talking about how angry, the anger is still residual there about Josh Hader being traded away?
Yeah, I'm not mad at Josh. I'd be happy to see him.
No, man,
I mean, there's a lot to talk about with that guy, but I thought it was the wrong time to get rid of him, and it was just indicative of this Brewers organization making really, in my opinion, dumb trade decisions.
Yeah. Speaking of trade decisions, we had in our weekend newsletter whether should the Bucks trade Giannis and just rebuild and say this is all we can do. Yeah, a whole lot of no on that. A lot of folks were like, no dog on that. But what I got was a whole lot of, can we trade the owner? Can we or the coach? So people very happy to trade the owner or the coach.
Yeah.
Giannis, not so much.
No.
People know what they like.
But I don't want him to have a situation where he's like, he's picking coaches. That's all I'll say.
That's true. From the heart of America's Up North, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All right, we've come to the part of the program where I do something I've never done in such strong terms before, but I first did it on Todd Alba's show yesterday, and I'm going to repeat a lot of it here today. And that's go after folks who I'm sure I agree with them politically on 99% of things, but I really don't like what they did yesterday. Somebody sent me a video clip of the Assembly Judiciary Committee hearing yesterday. And things got a little rough in there when somebody came to testify about a bill. The bill is a terrible bill, and folks are right to oppose the bill and want to testify against it. But with what happened next, it totally lost the message, and nobody's talking about the bill. Instead, the clip is going around of how the chair of the Assembly Judiciary Committee, Ron Tussler, I believe, had to adjourn the meeting and call police because one person who wanted to testify against the bill was wearing a hat, and the hat said, F Trump. And at that point, the chair, Tussler, said, well, wait a minute, you can't wear that. We have rules against these kinds of things here. And the guy was not going to take it off. Okay, if there's a dispute there, that'd be fine. But suddenly there was this heckling from the crowd. I mean, and borderline bullying in this assembly committee. And it was not helpful, is what I'm going to say. As the crowd became, you know, very, very MAGA-like, you know, with jeering, taunting the chair, taunting the Republicans on the committee. The Republican chair joined and said, look, if you're not going to take the hat off, we're going to, you know, call the authorities, have you escorted out, etc. People saying, just let him testify. Let him testify with the hat. Later, another clip shows a couple of police officers walking in going, why are we here? Why did you call us? And because the chair of the committee had left, there was really nobody to make the case to them that there was anything here in terms of a public disturbance. And so the police officers looked very befuddled, but then they left, as you would expect. They didn't like grab the guy and tase him like you see at some of these Trump rallies and everything. The point being this, at no point have I told you in these precious few minutes of broadcast time what the bill is, because we've lost the focus on it. Here's the deal on the bill. Right now, if a district attorney decides not to charge somebody with a crime, a judge can still convene a hearing, and that judge can listen to evidence and decide to file criminal charges against somebody. That's for everybody, okay? Due process. This bill from Republicans says that if a district attorney investigates a police-involved shooting death, and or police-involved shooting, I forget if it's a death or not, and if that district attorney decides not to file charges under this bill, no court would be allowed to say, wait, we want to take a look at it, and the court might file charges. So it's a way of obstructing justice, essentially, because you may have a DA in a county who is unusually friendly, shall we say, or biased toward one view of a situation that might lead to a police death or a police shooting, rather. But none of that came up because of this crowd that went all torches and pitchforks because some guy thought it would be funny to wear his F Trump hat. Does he have a right to wear it? Yeah. Yeah, in fact, somebody tried to defend that with me, citing a 1971 U.S. Supreme Court case that says, you know, what was it, F the draft or something like that. That person's not causing a public disturbance. That's not the point. We're not splitting legal hairs here. We're talking about not creating the same kinds of scenario that Trump and the MAGA heads want. They love the cheering and the jeering and the sideshow. We've been telling people for the longest time now, don't fall for the Trump sideshows. But similarly, don't create sideshows of your own. Because now the Republicans on that committee will take that and they'll run with it for ever. They will always tell the story about how the liberals, those dangerous liberals, they cause public disturbances. They wear the F word. Don't tell me all about the FJB and the other, the language that they use and the hats that they wear. We know that. We know what they do. They, whoever wears stuff with obscenities and flies flags with obscenities, they are clowns. They're clowns with power right now. But you're not going to take the power back by trying to get deep in the gutter with them. Now, some folks say, well, respect has to be earned, and these Republicans don't deserve respect in these committee hearings. If they're going to bring up bills like this that would make it easier for, say, a police officer to, not face criminal accountability for a bad action that leaves somebody dead. The talking point makes sense, but again, oppose the bill. Talk about the bill. Promote the bill as being a bad idea and an example of what doesn't work. Democrats and progressives are right when they say we need to be louder, we need to stand up more, but you need to be smart about how you do it, because otherwise it gets lost, and it's okay to have strong language, but the heckling and things like that. Talk to the voters. That's the only way you're coming back on this. And voters don't want to see you heckling. They want to see you tough. They want to see you have strong positions. They want you to help them understand why you're the better choice. So make your voice heard. Show up at these committee hearings. Leave the goofy costumes at home and mind your manners. Seriously. And I know that sounds like an old guy talking, but you're in the state capitol. We're talking about a bill. Talk about why the bill is bad. Don't fall for the other sideshows. Don't create sideshows of your own. Live from Lake Wissota, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. I mentioned the Milwaukee Brewers losing to the Astros 9-1 yesterday. I got talking about Josh Hader and forgot to wrap things up by telling you that the Brewers are off today. They are on the road once again, heading to Tampa for the weekend, and then Cleveland after that to take on the Guardians early next week. So the Tampa Bay Rays, who now play actually in Tampa instead of St. Petersburg because their stadium's broken, but they're now playing in a minor league stadium in the Tampa area. So that's where you will find the Brewers for this weekend. Let's turn our attention now to politics outside of Wisconsin. And the 2024 election is finally over because of one race in North Carolina that was dragging on and on. And I'm not going to lie, I really thought this was on the cusp of ending with conservative judges ordering thousands potentially of votes thrown out over a technicality, which might have made sure that the current progressive justice on the North Carolina Supreme Court, who won her election narrowly, actually lost. But that didn't happen. In the end, it turns out that she won that narrow race. And Michael McElroy is my colleague for Courier Newsroom's North Carolina outlet, the Cardinal and Pine, and joins us now from, I forgot to ask where you are. Are you in Raleigh? Where are you?
I'm in Raleigh, yeah.
You're in Raleigh. Michael, good to see you. Thank you for joining us here. You've been following this, of course, since way back when. So let's set it up first, probably better than what I did just there. And let's attach some names to this as well. We're talking about Progressive Justice Allison Riggs, who was up for re-election for the state Supreme Court race. Who was challenging her, and when did this whole thing go off the rails? Was it on election night?
Well, no, actually, because on election night, when they were counting just election day votes, Jefferson Griffin was ahead, so he wasn't challenging anything at that point. Oh. This only went off the rails a couple of days later once they started counting provisional ballots and overseas ballots, absentee ballots, that once all the votes were counted, that Allison Riggs went ahead by 734 votes. And that is when Jefferson Griffin started filing lawsuits to try and have some of those valid votes thrown out. And yet Jefferson Griffin is the judge. He's an appeals court judge in North Carolina. excuse me. And this has been such a tangle. I mean, it has just bounced from state court to federal court, back to state court, because obviously anytime you're talking about a voting rights issues, you've got those kind of overlapping spheres of whether it's a federal issue or a state issue. and it's just been such a mess. And it started with, hey, I want a recount by Jefferson Griffin, which is absolutely entitled under the law. And then he said, hey, I want another recount. And they said, sure, you can. Here's a limited recount of various counties. And each recount confirmed her victory. In fact, after the first recount, her margin went up a little bit. She was ahead by 600 some votes. And Griffin was like, I want a recount. I think I won. And they said, sure, here's a recount. Actually, you're right. The number was different. She's got more votes now. It's 734. so two recounts confirmed her victory. And after those recounts, he started filing lawsuits seeking to throw out more than 65,000 votes. And it wasn't just one technicality he was arguing. It was three real buckets. The bulk of those votes, 60,000 of them, 60,000 plus, were from voters who he said shouldn't have been counted because the state registration database for their registrations was missing some information that's required by law. But as state board officials said, there's a lot of reasons why that data might be missing. A lot of them is clerical errors from election officials. But another the one that stood out to me the most was their registrations might be slightly different from in the database might be slightly different than their actual registrations because they got married since they were registered, and now their last name, they took their husband's last name, and now their name is different, and so the registration database might be different.
It was amazing when we heard that. First off, he's going after, you know, married people who maybe I want to throw your ballots out. There was a point where a 3-judge panel on the North Carolina Court of Appeals ruled along party lines, as you write here, that 65,000 plus voters should have their ballots thrown out unless they proved their eligibility in 15 days. Well, then that got winnowed further, but it meant he was, Griffin, the conservative justice, was cheesing off a different group. First it was married people, then it was the military.
Yeah, well, and he went after the military at first as well. He went out right after Wade. But what was so funny about this, and funny might not be the right word, but at one point, before the appeals court made their ruling, he filed another brief in court that said essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, essentially, listen, if you're uncomfortable throwing out 65,000 votes, fine, just throw out enough votes for me to win, and then you can stop. That was essentially it. And so, but the military votes are actually staggering. This is the one thing that is the biggest to me. He said that overseas, and not just military, but all overseas voters who include mostly military serving overseas, they should have submitted a copy of their voter ID because we have voter ID in North Carolina. But that voter ID by state law only applied to in-person voters. It did not apply, according to state law, to overseas military voters. And he said it should have. And so that they should have submitted their voter ID, but the election officials did not ask for it. In fact, told them they didn't need to submit it. That's A. And B, there was no way for them to have done it because military voters vote through an online portal. And that online portal has no functionality for uploading a voter ID. And so he wanted to throw out, that was about 5,000 votes. Now, a 734 margin, 5,000 votes gives him plenty of room to have overturned that loss. But here's the other thing. Lots of military voters across the state voted in that way. He only challenged the voters who voted in that way in 6 Democratic counties. He did not challenge the voters who voted in that way in Republican leaning counties.
It's just, it's so, and that's very Wisconsin-ish. I could see Republicans doing the same thing about, and the, actually that happened after the 2020 election, was just challenging the vote counts in Milwaukee and Dane counties and Brown County, where Green Bay is. But this is where we left it with our listeners. It was a few weeks back where the state Supreme Court there limited the number of at-risk votes to those 5,000 overseas military voters and extended a deadline to 30 days to cure or otherwise prove who they are. And I thought, well, this is ridiculous, but I thought it was going to be at that point. And while it was going to, you know, make a lot of overseas military voters and their families unhappy, I wasn't sure that legally there was any more room to work with on this. But that takes us to what happened in the past couple of days here with a federal judge's ruling that, I guess, finally puts an end to it and got Griffin to concede, right?
Yeah. And that ruling from a Trump-appointed judge, by the way, it wasn't just definitive. It was scathing. Reading this judge's ruling was one of my favorite things to read in all of this thing, because he did not use this word, but he essentially called Griffin and Griffin's lawyers stupid. He wrote several times in which he flat out said, that's not correct. There is at one point where he was talking about a claim that Griffin made in his argument why something had happened. And he wrote, quote, that cannot be right. so he tore apart Griffin's arguments. And he essentially ruled that all these things together violate both due process and equal protections in the Constitution.
And again, that's what jumped out at me, is this was Judge Richard Myers is a Trump appointee. And it's a nice reminder that not every Trump-appointed judge is like an Aileen Cannon down in Florida, that there are people who still care to follow the rule of law. Maybe just because it was politically expedient this time, who's to say, but he did not go along with the line of rulings that make you scratch your head until you realize that this person is a Trump-appointed judge. So when I heard that Judge Myers had put out this scathing opinion, I thought, well, there's always the Supremes. And I always wondered if the next thing that Jefferson Griffin would do is hope that the Trump-appointed justices on the U.S. Supreme Court would overrule Judge Myers and once again use political motivation to change the will of the voters in this case. But instead, Jefferson Griffin basically conceded, which that was what I did not see coming. Was that a surprise move, or did he recognize that he had worked out all of the avenues available to him?
It was a surprise move, and I hit the concession. And in fact, I wrote that he was likely to appeal in my other piece. So that was a surprise to me. Mm-hmm. But I will say, though, that why it's surprising is Judge Myers' ruling was not a surprise. These things we kind of always knew, because Judge Myers has written in a separate case before the election that it was too late to bring these things up even a couple of weeks before the election. So after the election, it'd be obvious. And that was his whole thing was just after the fact, retroactive applying new rules to pass elections is what is unconstitutional. Myers' ruling was not a surprise. So, yeah, I was slightly surprised that Griffin conceded when he did. But I don't think that there was any question. In fact, the legal arguments in this case were always super clear. I think even the Supreme Court would have either said, no, we're not taking this up when the appeals court upheld Myers' decision. Or I think it's very likely that the Supreme Court, with maybe one or two extreme exceptions on that court, would have backed it entirely. It would have been a decisive win, I think, for Riggs. So the timing is odd. But the concern here is not that Griffin ever had a chance at the federal level. The concern here is that because the state courts entertained and
actually opened the door enough for him to have done it on the state level, that this then, as many folks have pointed out, offers a blueprint for future losing candidates to, through the court systems, isolate one or two things that someone got wrong somewhere along the way during the vote and use that as a way to try and overturn a close election. And that danger is very real, even if Jefferson Griffin was never going to be sat at the Supreme Court.
And by the way, this is not like the Wisconsin race earlier this year. This was not determining control of the Supreme Court. It is still very much a conservative majority, right?
Correct.
So this was about the one seat and basically about following the rules. Maybe some election rules need to be tweaked between now and then, but it was such an odyssey. And Michael, you were all over this from the start, and we really appreciate that. You can find what Michael's doing over at the Cardinal and Pine or Courier Newsroom outlet in North Carolina. Head over to cardinalpine.com or go to couriernewsroom.com to learn more. Michael, thank you again. Great to talk to you. Thanks for getting up and joining us this morning.
Of course, Pat. Thank you so much.
All right. Appreciate it very much. Hey, today's history lesson is next, as we always do, mornings up north and live here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And by the way, while you're looking up Cardinal and Pine at thecardinalpine.com, you can get our newsletter as well, upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
John is in a basement, mixing up the medicine. I'm on a pavement, thinking about the government. The man in a trench coat, badge out, laid off, says he's got a bad call.
This, of course, is Bob Dylan's Subterranean Homesick Blues in today's history lesson for this May 8th. But if in hearing this song, you think of that film clip of the flashcards being flipped over with parts of the lyrics to the tune, mm-hmm. well, you should know that it was on this day in 1965, 60 years ago today, that was filmed by D.A. Pennebaker.
Ooh.
And became one of the earliest music videos ever shot.
Nice. D.A. Pennebaker would go on to film a bunch of great musical documentaries.
Had to start somewhere, and yep. he started with If you're going to start with a landmark.
Yeah, right.
You know? Start with a milestone. So again, that was 60 years ago today. 55 years ago today, this day in 1970, the Beatles released their 12th and final studio album, Let It Be. Fast forward now to 1976, and the number one song in the country was the theme to a TV show. I loved that show. I don't want to say I missed the show, because I don't know that it would hit, you know, the same today. But for what it was in the mid-1970s,
yeah.
as a story about, a rundown high school in, was it the Bronx or Brooklyn?
I think it was Brooklyn.
Okay. Anyway, it was great for its time, and John Sebastian there of The Lovin' Spoonful had the number one song in the country with it. On this day in 1886... a pharmacist by the name of John Pemberton first sells a carbonated beverage, and he calls the carbonated beverage Coca-Cola.
Hmm.
And it wasn't a refreshing beverage. It was designed as a patent medicine, because back in those days, 1886, you could throw pretty much anything in a bottle and say, oh, it's medicinal. It'll cure what ails you. And this is the one that had staying power, not as a medicine, but as, you know, an addiction for so many of us all these years later.
You've got the black lung or the dropsies? Take some Coca-Cola.
Yes. So again, sold for the first time this day in 1886. Happy birthday to Coke. 85 years young today, singer Tony Tennille of The Captain and Tennille.
Oh, yeah. Whoa.
Bring her back. Oh, I see. You did it one more time. I get it.
Okay. Oh, I see. Okay. This is where the she.
Are we pulling back the curtain?
Back the curtain, and I'm a little not excited about. Okay, you keep talking, buddy.
Okay, here's the thing. See, I send Greg these tunes, but I send them as links to YouTube videos so that I can tell him exactly where in the song I want it to hit. But then he's got to go and turn that into a recording, because you don't want to rely on just internet links, because you might get a commercial or, you know, Sade singing some other tune entirely. And so he goes to record the bits of these songs, and most of the time it works as designed. And sometimes it doesn't. And as we like to say, hilarity ensued. Shall we try?
Absolutely.
Do we want to do it one more time? Tony Tennille is 85 years old today.
No, we can't. There we go.
There. See, we got the nice beginning to it now. That works.
Someone literally recorded the 3 seconds of the song and put that in there and didn't mark it. I'm taking it further behind the curtain.
Further, Greg's going to take somebody behind the curtain with a Louisville Slugger if this keeps up. Child TV star, teen idol, actor, singer Ricky Nelson was born this day in 1940, so he too would have been 85 years old today, born the same day as Tony Tennille, but tragically died back in 1985 at the age of 45. Singer Enrique Iglesias is the big 5-0 today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. So his dad was Julio Iglesias.
Mm-hmm. Still is.
And still is. I'm just wondering how old he might be, but I didn't look that up.
Julio's going to be in like his 80s.
Yeah, I know. Here's one more birthday. Philip Bailey from Earth, Wind, and Fire. He is 74 years old today. I think there are a lot of folks who are younger than me, and they only know Philip Bailey from like Easy Lover, the duet that he did with Phil Collins, because his name was on that one instead of Earth, Wind, and Fire. But loved hearing him do all the Earth, Wind, not all the Earth, Wind, and Fire songs, but many of them. So
Julio Iglesias is 81 years old.
All right, there we go. Happy birthday. No, not him. Enrique, his kid. Is 50 years old.
We're happy you're both alive.
That's right. Former President Harry S. Truman was born this day in 1884. On the National Day calendar today, this is National Free Trade Day. Boy, that's ironic. Today is National Iris Day. Today is National Make a Book Day. I'm sure you did that as a kid, where you'd get, you know, you'd fold some construction paper, maybe staple it, and do a little handwritten book.
I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm sure we all tried that.
Yeah, that's the ticket.
But I will never forget that the very early days of the internet, where it was some professor talking about how tough it is to get a book published, and a student standing up going, actually, it's easier than ever now. You just send it through the internet and a company will send you back the finished book. And I just remember my head going, poof, changed everything. It didn't mean the books were any better, but, you know.
Well, and anyway. Also, like, nowadays you're like, oh, he's written 4 books. Oh, really? They're self-published. Oh, okay.
Today is National Coconut Cream Pie Day. I love coconut cream pie. Not my favorite, but I do love it. National what? Oh, not a real pie for you, is it?
It's disgusting.
Okay.
Coconut's the worst.
This is World Ovarian Cancer Awareness Day. Please, ladies, get your annual checkups. National Student Nurse Day. And, of course, finally, National Have a Coke Day, which is normally what you say, you know, after you jinx somebody. But you don't even have to wait for the jinx this time. Just go have a Coke.
That's right.
Say happy birthday to that one lucky pharmacist. Yeah. Still ahead, State Senator Sarah Kieski, Melissa Baldoff has climate check. We'll talk about Sean Duffy's hypocrisy on fixing our broken air traffic control system. All ahead here on these Thursday mornings, powered by Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.